Top of Nowhere. And it's a great song, great production, but also a great theme, the top of nowhere, because it was the top of the program. So what better way to not get your expectations too high for this episode than to start the top of the program with a song called Top of Nowhere? Not that your expectations would be high, though, because as you already know, I'm the mayor of Nowheresville. But what you might not know is that in addition to me being the mayor of Nowheresville, I'm also the vice president of Nowhere Incorporated. And we are the world's largest exporter of nothing. We're also in the importation business. So we're both the world's largest importer and exporter of nothing. We got a lot of nothing going out. We got a lot of nothing coming in because we're Nowhere Incorporated. And I'm the vice president. And you may be wondering, if you're the vice president, then who's the president of Nowhere Incorporated? And the president is nobody. Get it? Nothing and nobody. But, you know, you think about the idea of, like, nowhere and nothing, and, you know, it's a very, just talking about the void very openly there. And imagine somebody saying, because you think about the word top, or the saying, like, top of the morning to you, and if anybody said that today, they're just automatically being annoying, you know, and maybe if they're born in 1923 and they're still alive, they're somehow able to do that in a way that's sincere, or at least, like, even if it's funny, it's kind of like, okay, you don't automatically think they're an asshole. But if someone says, like, top of the morning to you this day and age, like, the younger they are, the more of an annoying asshole they are. Like, when people try to be all old-timey to be funny, that was the kind of thing that was okay for a minute. And if I ever do that, I'm not doing it intentionally. I'm only doing it because I grew up watching nothing but Nick at Night, and my parents are like, they had me really late. They had me, like, when they were almost 40. So that explains all sorts of things. But top of the morning. But I was thinking, like, if we did live in an age when saying top of the morning was okay, it'd be great to respond to that. Like, somebody, you're walking down the street and somebody just sincerely says, like, top of the morning, and you respond and you go, top of nowhere. And like just the looks you would get, like just being an asshole for no reason is kind of funny to me. Not like not in an overtly overt way. But still just like something like that where it's just like someone would do a double take. Like I think about a good friend of mine moved to town about, God, it was almost 15 years ago, 14 years ago. And we were walking on campus. He lived near the campus of the college. And they had just laid fresh cement for a sidewalk on the campus. And we were just walking. We were going to buy a bag of weed, something. And this guy, this large guy in a tie-dye shirt, like looked up at us. He was just so excited. He was like doing something. He was like riding in the wet cement. And he goes, "Wet cement?" Like, that thing people do when, like, you know, it's funny how, like, my criticisms to start this episode off are, like, when people act, like, old-timey, but then also when adults act like children. Like, he was like, "Fresh cement!" Like, and all these people were excitedly, like, writing in the cement, which is cool. Like, write in the cement. Please do. Like, we got this patio put in my childhood house growing up, and my mom was like, "Well, you know, since we're getting this patio, we'll get you a basketball hoop, and like we'll put it in the corner of the patio, whatever. You can use it to play basketball." And so we laid the cement, and so I wrote in the cement, "Eric NBA 96. So, you know, my credibility as far as writing in wet cement is pretty high. But this guy, like, I was in college. Everybody in this scenario was in college, and just this doofus in a tie-dye shirt looked at us, and he's like, "Wet cement!" And I just instinctively said, "Why don't you put some in your mouth?" And I didn't, like, mean to be an asshole. Like, I honest to God wasn't trying to be, like, just mean. It was just sort of like a quip I just fired off. And the guy's face just dropped. And he, like, muttered something that I didn't hear. It was clearly, like, probably, like, "You fucking asshole." And my friend, who, like, had a very dark sense of humor and all sorts of things, like, he wasn't a prude when it comes to being an asshole at all. Both in terms of his own behavior and mine. And we took a few steps and he's like, "Man, I can't believe you said that. You know, I guess I just really just like laid it into this poor guy." And then 15 years later on my podcast, I'm calling him a doofus in a tie-dye shirt and like reveling in ruining his day when he was just really excited about wet cement. Although it would be funny if he was writing in that wet cement like, "Aaron, NBA 2005 or whatever year it was. That'd be funny. It'd be funny if he was writing the exact same thing I wrote when I was a kid. I don't know why that would be funny. But top of nowhere, Nowheresville. That's the kind of thing now. Like, well, joking about, you know, being a business in the business of nothing. You know, we're Nowhere Incorporated. We import and export nothing, and our president is nobody. I feel like that's kind of the world we live in. You know, you think about the internet in particular, and I feel like so many services, so many companies now, especially in the tech industry, which is everything now. I mean, everything is the tech industry. You don't have jobs that are really outside of that. And I mean, if a core part of a business doesn't depend on the tech industry in some major way, either through third-party services they use or just something, they are truly archaic, and they're either, you know, it's either like something incredibly blue-collar and industrial or hands-on where they just don't need that, or it's just like somehow they're just hanging on by the skin of their teeth. And there are businesses like that, and they're impressive, but it's just, you know, it's unlikely to find businesses that don't in some way rely on the tech industry for some kind of service. But anyway, a lot of those businesses, I feel like they really are in the business of nothing. And I'm not saying they're selling snake oil or anything, but like when you think about businesses today, even things like music and things like that, where it's like we offer a streaming service. It's like, what the hell is that? You know, people were all worried about MP3s years ago, you know, 15, 20 years ago, whenever like Napster first came around, which is like 20 years ago, actually. People were all worried about MP3s, people in the business. They were all worried about MP3s taking over. And then, like, once the business caught up with MP3s and they figured out these services for, like, we can sell you MP3s. You can buy the album on iTunes because everybody wants to do that. That was totally an appealing way to get music. you know, after that, then it was like something always, you know, just when you think you're caught up, something always just creates another gap. And I think the whole streaming thing is a great example of that, where just as soon as like artists and record labels and stuff thought they had the MP3 thing like relatively nailed, like I think they knew that they weren't going to be able to like completely control that in the same way that they couldn't control like people dubbing tapes or burning CDs, a little harder to control than that, but still in that same way, you know, just when they thought they had a handle on it, then it's like, here's these streaming services and we're going to give you lip service, but we're going to give you like seriously, we're going to seriously nickel and dime you. And that's like the whole thing that's in the news lately about there's a bunch of artists who have come together and they're passing some kind of act, an actual like national political, I don't know what to call it, a legislative act where it's like, because these companies, these I don't even need to name them, but these streaming companies, you all know who they are, have really just been nickel and diming people because people listen to so much of that music. And like, how do you even really calculate like what you're, because like people pay like a monthly fee for the service, like, oh, you can listen to this without ads. And then like, and we're in this world where everything is based on views and like impressions. And if you're not familiar with the lingo, like I was in the business for a little while. It's kind of my field. You know, advertisements are sold based on impressions, and an impression is like when it's seen by somebody, like it, and not necessarily seen by a unique person, but it's like basically like how many times it's viewed. It's like, oh, you know, I'm buying 1,000 impressions of ad space, so it's basically 1,000 times that ad will be seen 1,000 times. But it could be like the same person, and there's all kinds of scams where like you can hire like 10,000 people in Pakistan to just like for like a dollar to like just like look at an ad, and then you sell someone ad space, and you're like, look, you got 1,000 impressions, but really it's just you're hiring somebody to look at them. There's so much snake oil. There's so much nothing being imported and exported in this world, and so much stuff is this way now. Because you even think about like what people were afraid of in the early internet. You think about, well, just to finish with my thought on the whole MP3 like streaming thing, it was just when you think you're caught up, like the gap enlarges again and there's something else that you have to catch up with. And it's just a never ending process. And it feels like the substance gets like thinner and thinner. It turns in, it's more and more vaporized, vapor like. It's more and more vaped as time goes on. It's like an MP3 was kind of like people had MP3 collections. Like there were like some people, like I remember knowing kids as a teenager who like they were really proud of their MP3 collection. Like they, you know, they'd add you on Napster or something and they'd like be very like particular and proud of the MP3s they had put like minimal effort into collecting. But you figure you go one step beyond that and like someone just has a streaming service or they can go to YouTube. You can listen to anything on YouTube. I didn't see that coming. Like I remember like listening to music on YouTube gradually more and more, like as that became kind of a thing, people would upload things. But I didn't foresee like YouTube just becoming like filled with full albums. Like you can listen to any album, like the most obscure stuff. Like, and I have taste in some very obscure stuff, like not, and I'm not saying that to be like, oh, not in the same way that a kid is like proud of his MP3 collection. Although maybe I'm not going to say I'm above that kid. I'm not going to say I'm any different, but still it's like, I'm continually amazed at the stuff that creeps onto YouTube. Not anymore though. So that's the thing, is you get desensitized. I remember like 5 years ago being really like amazed that some obscure metal demo was on YouTube. The whole, something I had been trying to hear for like 15 years and it was just there. And then now I'm not surprised at all. It's just the new standard. But I do feel like things become more and more vaporized. You think about, no, I won't go into that. No, I might as well. I'm reading the Bible right now, so I know that I talk about this shit in every episode now. I don't care. But it talks about how like man is just vapor. You know, to God, man is just vapor. And then there's a part later where it's like he just becomes like more and more like vapor to God. And I feel like that's kind of what's happening with streaming services. It's like MP3s were more like vapor than owning like a CD. But a CD was more vapor-like than a record. And then now this streaming thing, it's just basically like a wisp of mist. It's like one of those things that sprays like a misty fragrance into a hotel hallway. That's basically what a streaming service is. And we're going to going to reach a point where there's just nothing. We're going to reach a point where truly it's we're truly going to be paying Nowhere Incorporated to give us nothing and take nothing. That's where we're going, man. But you think about like what people were afraid of in the early days of the internet, where it was like, oh, I don't want to give my credit card info. I don't want to give them my credit card information. But the businesses then, like, think about the dot-com boom, and everyone's like, oh, the bubble. It was this bubble because they couldn't manage it. But most of those businesses were selling, like, real tangible things. It was like, you know, order books, and we'll send them to you. Give us money on this website, and we'll send you books in return. And then Amazon was like, oh, we also have, like, pencils. We also have CDs. We also have this and that. And now you can buy anything there. But like it was just that kind of stuff. Like you pay us money and we will give you a tangible product in the mail. And pretty much most businesses, like I knew a girl, like her dad had an eyeglasses company. You know, he just sold like he just had his own business and they sold different kinds of eyeglasses, you know, and he made his living doing that. And it's just a very like hands-on practical thing. Like there's nothing scary about that. Like if you're willing to put your credit card information, you get eyeglasses in the mail. And I feel like a lot of businesses were that way. And there were other services too, of course, but it was before this age of like how many views did you get? How many views did you get? Because I'm not even talking about, like, people posting their own shit, their personal shit, to try to get, like, whatever attention as some puny human. I'm talking about people who are in, like, the business of video and, like, people who even just make, like, professional videos. You think about, like, music videos are released directly to YouTube now. Like, MTV is just a complete afterthought, if that. MTV is vapor. I got vapor on the brain, you know? I just got vapor on the brain. My apologies. But, MTV is just like a vaporized afterthought now, and you just release things direct to YouTube, and it's all judged in like, it's not like, oh, you know, our video got in rotation on Total Request Live. Instead, it's like, how many views did it get? How many views? How many thumbs up? How many thumbs down? You know, that's the world we live in today, where it's all about views and likes, and I've gotten in the habit of doing these very long intros. I'm kind of self-conscious about it, but fuck it, man. Just say what you're feeling. You know, this world of views and likes, I don't like that world. I love all these services. Like, I've always been a fan. Like, you think about, like, what Facebook is and things like that. And Facebook, like, people are like, oh, social media, this and that. It's like, you more often hear criticism of social media today than you hear anything good about it. But those services have always been around. Like, if you think about what Facebook is, for example, it's like, there's a messenger. Okay, we used to have AOL Instant Messenger, ICQ. You basically have a little blog space. I mean, you can write, it's not like Twitter. You can write as much as you want on Facebook. So you have, it's like a blog with a messenger service with an email service too, because like the you have like an inbox, so you can basically send emails. You can chat like you would with a messenger program. You can post photos, so it's like having like a Flickr account too. So you have all these things that used to be separate services in the earlier days of the internet, and they've just been brought under one banner. And I'm sure I could think of more examples like of different services that have basically been incorporated under this one umbrella with social media. And games, I mean, like, it has games on it, too. So it was, like, used to go to, and I'm not even talking about, like, good games, because we know, like, Facebook games are, like, generally, like, shitty, like, app sort of games. Not necessarily shitty. Scrabble's on there. It's not a bad game. But, you know, it reminds me of, like, the old, used to go to these sites that were, like, entirely Flash-based, and you could play, like, a shitty version of Tetris. Not that it was shitty. Like, I don't know. This is just going off. But, those games, they weren't bad. They were just like off-brand. Everything felt off-brand. And so Facebook is just kind of, it kind of swallowed everything up. It including like forums and stuff too. Because it with Facebook groups and things like that, they sort of like took over where forums left off. So it basically like incorporated everything that worked. Like LiveJournal, blogs, everything that worked about the internet. Everything that people actually used. And then it put them under one umbrella and made everyone resent it. And I've thought about, like, why is that? Like, why does everyone completely resent this thing that just incorporated all of these existing popular services that people didn't seem to have a problem with before, if that makes sense? Like, people didn't hate AOL Instant Messenger or ICQ. They didn't hate their email. mail. They didn't hate Flickr. They didn't hate LiveJournal. I mean, they might have hated LiveJournal. I don't know. They didn't hate, like, they didn't hate people for, like, using a blog. It was just, don't read the blog. And if it, whatever, you know what I mean? It wasn't like, people didn't have this vitriol toward it. And people weren't writing articles about how it's, like, horrible for your mental health to use all these different services. Even if you were using them all together, like even if you were using each one of those separate services, like, 15 years ago, even if you were using them all at the same time, you know, it, nobody talked about that being bad for your mental health. But somehow, like, putting them all under this one umbrella under the name Facebook or whatever, somehow that's bad for you. And that's all you hear about today is how it's bad for you. Oh, the younger people are disconnecting. The younger people are canceling Facebook. And I've thought about why. And I think it's, on one hand, I think it's like the overconnectedness. I think like the whole like friend system and like system is why. Because like, why the fuck does that exist? What I loved about the early part of the internet was like you would just put stuff up and like maybe... Definitely if you ran your own website, like if you had your own domain and you paid for your own server and stuff, you could like check out statistics and maybe get a feel for like where people are coming from. Like some people, even just like shitty GeoCities sites, would have those little globes that would show like where everybody's coming from. Someone visited my page from China. So you had stuff like that. You had like a, you could get a general idea of how many like page views you were getting, and you could set it up so that they were unique, so you would know like, oh, it wasn't just the same person refreshing the page. I got like this many unique IPs. Like there was actually like there were ways to determine that, but it wasn't like you didn't really know who, and it was much more of a comment world. You know, people would reply to your blog with comments. They would reply to your I don't know. It was just this comment world, and like people would comment on your Flickr or your PhotoBucket account if they cared enough. And there wasn't this like weird voting system. And you even think about like sites like Reddit, where it's like this voting system. It's a vote yay or nay, and it's like taking what was cool about forums, which is like this like weird, like everybody can like just feed into this crazy shit, but it's made it like much broader and then given it this weird yay or nay voting system, and everybody's worried about that. Like that's, people aren't thinking about like what they're doing. They're trying to get like attention, and in order to get attention, you have to get a certain number of like thumbs up. And you don't want to get thumbs down, because if you get thumbs down, that's all you'll focus on. Even if you get 1,000 thumbs ups on your YouTube video, you'll just focus on the 3 thumbs downs, because that's truly how it works. It's that negativity bias. There's just something about it. Like if you do something, if you make a movie and you get like 10 positive reviews and 1 negative review, you're going to just obsess over the negative review. It's what we do. And like that'll happen like when I hear friends talk about like everybody hates me, and I'm like, they're not thinking about all the people who like them or are just like middle of the road people who are just like, oh, you're cool, whatever. You know, they might not be your best friend, but like you're not focusing on that. You're focusing on like the 3 people who like you don't get along with. And it's like, keep that perspective. It's important to remember that. And this is all about how like we're in this business. Yeah, this business today of nothing. And I really do feel like we are. I feel like, at least with the earlier internet, with the quote-unquote dot-com bubble, we ultimately were selling real products. And now we're selling views, impressions, which even that sounds so funny. Like, I feel like that's the perfect word to describe the bullshit of all this, impressions, because it's all just like this twisted up impression thing. And I'm not even going to say that it's all snake oil, because snake oil, I feel like, is the standard now. And when the standard becomes snake oil, it's not really snake oil anymore, because it's just what everybody expects, and it's the new normal. I know I was weaving several different threads that were probably left frayed at the end of that, and I feel like I was going somewhere with it, but we are in this age of nothing, and I'm okay with it. I'm not afraid of that. Although I do see, like, if the dot-com bubble was a bubble that popped and we had, like, a horrible economic collapse afterward, because I think that the dot-com popping, the popped pimple of the dot-com world, whatever you want to call it, I think I've heard that contributed to the 2008 recession or whatever. I don't know. But, you know, if that was a bubble that popped and it was based on just nothing but air and not substance, I wonder what the fuck this is that we're currently experiencing. Like, what's going on in the tech world? What's going on in the business world today? If the dot-com bubble of the 90s and early 2000s was just a bubble filled with nothing that could be popped, then this is really, this is like a fucking, I don't even know. This is just air filled with more air. There's not even a membrane to this bubble. You know, speaking of membraneless bubbles, I think heaven's like that. Maybe we're in heaven, because I imagine heaven, there's just like a membrane of air surrounding more air, and everything's just floating. And this is a song by a guy named James Pastel, which sounds like a name, the name of a guy who could, you know, authentically sing about heaven. James Pastel. And the song is called Heavenly Dream. And it does sound like a membrane of air encapsulating a much larger field of air. And I do like that doo-wop is as downcast as it can be, as sappy as it can be, as pathetic as it can be. It's often ascendant. It's often focused on heaven and, you know, just this glorious, soaring, heavenly dream. James Pastel.
I thought I could see the moon, the stars, all in love. I thought we were joined together, so happy and gay, like the stars in the Milky Way. But soon I woke up and discovered it was just my heavenly dream.
Pastel, Heavenly Dream. It's been a while since I played a song that had a good vocal break, spoken vocal break like that. A lot of doo-wop has that, where just mid-song or toward the end of the song, it'll just have like a spoken word segment. And generally it's a romantic song where it's the guy like letting his true feelings be known. Earlier today, this morning, I was listening to the well-known Leuven Brothers song, Satan is Real, and that has one of the all-time best spoken vocal breaks in it, where it's like, and tell them that Satan is real too, and hell is a real place. It's one of the best, which is great coming on the heels of Heavenly Dream, to reference that, because in the Leuven Brothers song, he's hiding out in, or it's in a church. I'm thinking of a different song. I'm thinking of Satan Lied to Me, where he hides out in a church. But no, in Satan is Real, they're in church, and a little old man says, like, the preacher's talking about how God is real and heaven is real and all of that. And the guy's like, well, tell them Satan's real too, and hell is a real place. That's what he actually says. Satan is real and hell is a real place. So while that heavenly dream with the great spoken word from James Pastel was real, hell is real too. And these next three songs are going to reinforce that. And they're going to be by Donna Harris, mid-1960s country. And the first song is called Sending Him Back to You. I'm sending him back to you. Sending him back to another girl, although I like to imagine it's like sending him back to his mother or something. I'm sending him back to you. I'm sending him back up your womb. The second song is called If You Think You've Reached the Bottom, a great abyss song. I feel like this song pays great tribute to the abyss of human experience, because if you think you've reached the bottom of that abyss, it just keeps going. And it has a lyric that goes, I'm much lower than the dirt is, but you walk all over me. I look up to see where you kick me around. I'm going to say that again. I'm much lower than the dirt is, but you walk all over me. I look up to see where you kick me around. Fucking incredible. I don't care if it's poetry. That's incredible writing. And, you know, I'm much lower than the dirt is, as I said, a true abyss song from Donna Harris. And the third song is Masquerade Party. And it's got an interesting lyric, because I might have the wrong idea about what masquerade means, and maybe I should look it up. And just so you know, I never look anything up. I look up, like, one thing once in a while, but most of the time I just kind of, like, hover around in my ignorant state. But it has a part about how she's, like, going to be wearing a broken heart costume, and, you know, because that's, you know, what he's made her into. And Jimmy, I think his name is. I think she says Jimmy. If not, I mean, so many of these songs, like so many of the girl songs where like a girl is singing about a broken heart, like so many of them are about guys named Jimmy. Maybe it was James Pastel from Heavenly Dream. If it is a Jimmy song, I can't remember. A Jimmy song. But she says that like he broke her heart, so she's wearing a broken heart costume. But is that what a masquerade party is? Is a masquerade party like a true like Halloween party where you just wear whatever costume you want? Because my idea of a masquerade party is where you wear those stupid little like masks. Like it seems super French. I hate the idea of that. Like it makes me think of Eyes Wide Shut. That movie came out and I feel like I watched some of that. Maybe it's not a bad movie. I'm not even talking shit on it. But like my idea, like I would never want to go to one of those parties where you like hold those like, it's like a eye mask with a stick on it. It's like a Zorro mask with a stick on it with like sequins on it or something and like a feather. Like I hate that, you know. Whereas I do like Halloween parties. Like I like a good true like costume party. That's what I mean. Like a Halloween costume party. And tomorrow, what's the fucking difference? Tomorrow I'm going to a Halloween party and I'm going to be dressing as Bret Hart, Bret the Hitman Hart. So while she is, you know, Donna Harris in this masquerade party song, she is going as a broken heart. I'm going as Bret the Hitman Hart. So I feel like there's a connection here. Last year I was Hollywood Hulk Hogan. This year I'm Bret Hart. I should maybe take influence from this song and go as a broken Bret Hart. But I'm going to go ahead and play the songs now before that joke gets any worse. Donna Harris, Sending Him Back to You. She's sending me back to where I came from. That's what she's doing.
You can't set another plane on your table at 8, 'cause I'm sending him back home to you. I wonder if you know that just look down. I'm much lower than the dirt is where you walked all over me. I look up to see where you kicked me around. Still, I'd be fool enough to go and take you back again. If you think you've reached the bottom, just look down. If you think you've reached the bottom, just look down. I've just been invited to a masquerade party tonight at 8. I'm glad they didn't specify you have to be accompanied by a date. 'Cause just last night, Jimmy and I broke apart. I'd be outstanding, don't you think, if I go as a broken heart. I'm bound to be the center of attraction, so different from all the rest. The mood of the party just won't fit the way I'm dressed. But if I win the prize, I really should give Jimmy a part. 'Cause he's the reason I'll be going to the party as a broken heart. I should win the prize for the costume that I wear, 'cause it is for real. If the judges don't guess that I'm only dressed the way that I feel, I'm bound to be the center of attraction, so different from all the rest. I know 'cause the mood of the party just won't fit the way I'm dressed. But if I win the prize, I really should give Jimmy a part. 'Cause he's the reason I'll be going to the party as a broken heart. 'Cause he's the reason I'll be going to the party as a broken heart.
Yeah, if I win the prize, I really should give Jimmy a part. 'Cause he's the reason I'm going as a broken heart. That idea of giving someone credit, or in this case, part of a prize. I don't hear the word prize enough. Did you get the prize? You only hear it at like carnivals. But anyway, the idea of giving someone even just credit or acknowledgement for something shitty. 'Cause that's the thing people do. Like Michael Jordan did that sort of. He's kind of like Donna Harris in this way. 'Cause when Michael Jordan got inducted into the Hall of Fame, he gave a speech. And he thanked his, I think it was his high school basketball coach for like not putting him on varsity the first year. Because that's a famous story. It's one of those things, like it's one of those motivational quotes where it's like when someone is struggling to do something, someone tells them, well, you know, when Michael Jordan was a freshman in high school, they didn't put him on varsity. Because it's like, and then he went on to be Michael fucking Jordan, best basketball player ever, in case you didn't know who he was. In case you didn't know who he was. NBA 96, in case you didn't know who he was NBA 96. He really was NBA 96. He was my sport court. I guess that's what it was. It was a patio sport court. You could eat hot dogs on it or you could shoot some hoops. Just like a real basketball court. You can either stand around eating hot dogs or you can shoot some hoops. But Michael Jordan, yeah, he famously gave this passive-aggressive acknowledgement of his... Maybe it wasn't even passive-aggressive. Maybe it was just downright shitty. Like, he basically said, like, thanks for not putting me on varsity. And he gave this weird, like he dissed his high school basketball coach because it was like, you gave me the motivation. And people do that a lot. They're like, I just want to thank my haters. They just don't let go of things. Donna Harris, like, I'd like to thank Jimmy for breaking my heart, and that's why I won the contest with my broken heart costume. Michael Jordan with his broken heart costume on, thanking Jimmy, his high school basketball coach. It turns out Jimmy was Donna Harris's ex-boyfriend who broke her heart, and Jimmy was also Michael Jordan's high school basketball coach. And honestly, since that song was from 1966, that might be possible. You know, I'm just saying, I know it's unlikely, but the Jimmy that she's singing about could actually, in theory, when it comes to like timelines and everything, be the same guy who coached Michael Jordan and held him back his freshman year, only to be thanked. And it turns out Jimmy just gets credit for all the shitty things he does because he motivates people to overcome the shitty things he does to them. It's a good way to justify shitty behavior. Oh, I'm just making you tougher. I'm just making your life. You're gonna thank me later. You're gonna thank me at your NBA 96 induction speech. You're going to thank me at the masquerade party. And then the other part about there's actually a lesser known part of Michael Jordan's NBA Hall of Fame induction speech. There's a lesser known part. Like after he thanked his high school basketball coach, he said this line where he goes, "I'm much lower than the dirt is, but you walk all over me. I look up to see where you kick me around." Quote unquote, Michael Jordan. But what that lyric actually reminds me of, because I'm not letting go of that lyric, but what that lyric reminds me of is the doom sludge band Grief. I think it's their first album, Come to Grief. There's a song with a lyric that's like, "I slither in the mud because that's where I belong." And it's pretty much the same exact thought. You know, I think that Grief album is probably from like 1991 or something. And they were just channeling Donna Harris. "I slither in the mud because that's where I belong. I'm much lower than the dirt is, but you walk all over me. I look up to see where you kick me around." Same idea. Same exact idea. But just to transition to a completely different idea, this is a song by a guy named Alan Chase, and it's called "I'm in Love with Connie Francis." And you had these sort of songs back then. There were these sort of novelty songs, these novelty records were the songs about being in love with a famous singer. And some of the lyrics are pulled from Connie Francis songs. He's saying in the song, like he thinks the songs are about him. So it's really this delusional stalker sort of song. Alan Chase, a delusional Connie Francis stalker with a wonderful velvet voice. So that's an interesting thing, too. Like, if you have a delusional stalker, it's got to be weird if they're really talented. Like, think about that. Like, you think about stalkers. You think about, like, the Bjork stalker, like the guy who shot himself in the head and, like, tried to send some weird, like, what even was it? Like a bomb? He tried to send something in the mail to Bjork. Like, you all know what I'm talking about. You all know what I'm talking about. But, like, I don't think he was very talented. At least he didn't seem talented. Yeah, you know that Bjork stalker who killed himself and tried to send a bomb in the mail? I don't think he was very talented. I don't know. Maybe he was. I don't know. But either way, I don't think that stalkers, delusional stalkers, celebrity stalkers, are typically as talented as Alan Chase here is with "I'm in Love with Connie Francis." I wonder if she ever heard this, because Connie Francis was huge. She was like... she was huge. That's the only way to put it, really. I wonder if this song ever got back to her, or if her security guards like checked her mail and were like, "She's not getting this. She ain't getting this."
I don't know if I should tell you. I kept this secret a long time, but I just gotta tell somebody. Maybe you think I'm crazy, but I'm in love with me. Miss Connie Francis, although we never met, it's true. 'Cause every time she sings about the way she's falling, she don't know that I'm falling too. I'm in love with Miss Connie Francis, and she wants to know where the boys are. Well, I would like to tell her that I'm right here and waiting,
But I can't, 'cause Connie's a star.
Connie's a star.
I know every note of blues soaring now, and everybody, somebody's blue. I felt as though we strode the lane together, 'cause you're nobody till somebody loves you. Whoa. Francis, I fell many tears ago. So I got this strange feeling that Miss Connie Francis sings only for me, I know. Only for me, I know.
Well, now you know my secret. And just in case you were listening, Connie, I sure hope you understand.
I'm in love with Connie Francis there was followed up with I'm in love with you. Alan Chase, I'm in love with Connie Francis. Buddy Stevens with I'm in love with you. And I paired those songs together because they both start with the phrase I'm in love with blank. I'm in love with Connie Francis. I'm in love with you. But with the Buddy Stevens song, he doesn't actually specify who the you is. He could be addressing Connie Francis because he's addressing whoever the person is. He's addressing her directly. Could be Connie Francis. Maybe it is. Maybe it's not. But he's addressing her directly. So we don't have enough information to know that it's not Connie Francis. Every song where they don't specify who the person is in the history of music is about Connie Francis. You heard it here first. But as the Buddy Stevens song says, you know, he's in love with this girl, but she's running around with someone else. And maybe if it is Connie Francis, maybe she's running around with Alan Chase. Despite what a delusional stalker he is, maybe his wonderful, as you heard, his absolutely wonderful voice won her over. No, I bet it wasn't his wonderful singing voice, but as you heard, he did a little spoken word vocal break near the end of that song, and that's what won her over. So she actually gave him a chance, proving that delusional stalkers can win sometimes. If you noticed, with that Buddy Stevens song, I mentioned how the song refers to another guy, and I used the phrase running around with, and I did that on purpose because I'm in love with you is a direct ripoff musically of the song Red Cadillac with a Black Mustache. Famous song. That one's been covered by a lot of people over the years. It's one of those songs that even like shitty modern rockabilly bands cover because it's one of the best all-around rockabilly ballads. My favorite version is the one by Bob Lumen from the 1960s. But the Buddy Stevens, I'm in Love With You, is a direct ripoff of that. The guitar, it's basically a slightly slower, more somber, sobering version of Red Cadillac and a Black Mustache. Which says a lot because honestly, Red Cadillac and a Black Mustache is a pretty somber, sobering song in my opinion, because it's about your girlfriend running around with a guy with a red Cadillac and a black mustache, there's nothing more somber and sobering than that. Like your girlfriend's hanging out with him. I guess that's better though than her hanging out with a guy with a black Cadillac and a red mustache, because that's getting kind of out there. But as the Buddy Stevens song said, the grass looks greener on the other side, but when you get there, you find somebody's lied, which kind of goes hand in hand with my favorite lyric that I keep citing from earlier. I'm much lower than the dirt is, but you walk all over me, ... The grass looks greener on the other side. You know, I guess just grass and dirt go together so well, which is why I can connect that. I feel like, you know, there's not enough grass and dirt in this music. I don't hear enough references to grass and dirt, and those things go together hand in hand. And I feel like grass and dirt should actually replace the phrase hand in hand. They go together hand in hand. They go together like grass and dirt. That's one of those things someone would say if they want to sound like more blue collar, which some people do. There's like some people from the city or the suburbs, because that's like a whole thing. Like you have the people who try to sound ghetto and black, like suburban kids who want to be rappers, white kids who want to be black, who like start talking in ghetto slang. But there's this whole other type of person who adopts like rural slang. And I might be guilty of that on this show when I'm doing like my weird parody characters, but hopefully I don't talk that way. I really hope I don't. I just talk like an old-timey, pseudo-blue-collar... Oh, man. I'm probably guilty of everything I'm criticizing on here. It's just, they go together like grass and dirt. Last song was by a guy named Buddy Stevens, and on the last episode, I played A Buddy Block with three songs by Buddy White. And one of those songs, one of the Buddy White songs from last episode, was called Rainy Season. And we don't have another Buddy here, but we have another Rain song. And it's going to be Bruce Brakefield with Rain Boy. And that sounds like he's talking about some kind of superhero. Rain Boy, a joke superhero. It makes me think of Bart Simpson's superhero character. I can't remember what it's called. Like, it's some atomic thing, but it might as well be Rain Boy. That's what I would say. If, like, people were talking about The Simpsons, I'd be like, oh, I loved it when Bart played Rain Boy. I'd be like, what are you talking about? You know, Rain Boy. Not Rain Man. That's another thing. Rain Man's an entirely different thing. I'm talking about Rain Boy. He's the one who throws the toothpicks on the ground. You know, Rain Man can count the toothpicks without counting them individually. Rain Man's superpower is he looks down and he can count the number of toothpicks just by looking at them. Rain Boy's superpower is he throws the toothpicks on the ground. He can scatter the toothpicks. But this song's not about a rain boy. It's saying rain boy. But Bruce Brakefield, he's a guy I've played on the show before, a long time ago, and I'm actually going to play two songs by him, and the second song is being played for the second time. The second song is the song I played probably one of the earlier episodes, maybe the first, second, third, 20th, Every Night's a School Night episode, but I've played this song before. It's called In Your Heart. And Bruce Brakefield's great. It's definitely in the country territory. It's firmly in country, but it's got something kind of, I don't want to say ragtime, because I don't like ragtime, and I don't know if this would even count. But it's got something about the rhythm and the melody kind of fit in with my idea of that. Because ragtime is one of those things, like, I'm not going to sit here and say I hate it, but it's something I have no desire to hear. But you do hear that kind of influence, maybe just that era, creep into some music, some old country music, especially... this isn't that old, but still, you hear it a lot in the early 50s of country, like before after about 1956, once you get toward the late 50s, you kind of lose a little bit of that in country. But in the early 50s, for sure, you hear it. And this song is from, I think this song is actually from the early 60s. Both these songs are from the early 60s, but it sounds like it could have been recorded a decade earlier. And the production, too, the production's extremely raw, extremely lo-fi. Bruce Brakefield just, you know, it's like he's from another time. But In Your Heart is one of my own rips, and there's a lot of surface noise. So just imagine that you're in front of a campfire and this song's playing somewhere behind you, and you're just, you know, for all the surface noise you're hearing, just put your hands close to the speakers and pretend that it's warming you up, as it should, because there's some rain coming.
Yeah,
that last song was actually about Connie Francis as well. Bruce Brakefield, In Your Heart. And as you heard, he didn't specifically name the woman he was talking about. And as I said earlier, songs that don't specifically name the woman they're talking about are all about Connie Francis. At least that's what I think. And what I think is true. Or to be all modern about it, what I feel. That's what I feel. And I feel that it's true. But speaking of true, this next song is not by a Connie, but it's by a Flo. It's a name you don't hear much anymore, Flo. In fact, I didn't know any Flos growing up. I didn't have a single, like, I knew some Connies. I sound like a New Yorker saying Carney, but I knew some Connies. But yeah, there were some moms, some teachers who had the name Connie, but I didn't know any Flos. Flo is very much a 1950s housewife sort of name. Actually, the only Flo I knew of was another musician. This next song is by Flo Fay, but as a teenager, the only other Flo I was aware of was a musician, the drummer for Cryptopsy, Flo Mornier. I think that's how you pronounce it. It's French-Canadian. Flo Mornier, kids who were really into drums would be like, Flo's drumming, because it's, you know, very fast and technical. So the only Flos I know who are musicians are Flo Fay, which, let me just, do I even need to say it, like that fucking name? Flo Fay, two words, F-L-O-F-A-Y, Flo Fay, it sounds like a product. That's what we say at my business, my company, where I'm the vice president of Nowhere Incorporated. I mentioned before how we import and export nothing, but we, you know, any business, you know, you have your own little terms for things. You have your own, what do you call them? Just your own way of talking, your own little shorthand. And instead of calling everything nothing, we say flofay. We import flofay and we export flofay. Hey, did you get that latest order for more flofay? That's what I say to my employees at Nowhere Incorporated. I say, hey, did you send out that last batch of flofay? Well, that's what we're going to be doing right now. We're going to be sending you a batch of flofay. And last episode or the episode before, I was talking about how just the theory that the universe is constantly expanding, and I said that the universe expands when you just talk. But what I should have said is that the universe expands when you tell the truth. Not just when you talk. Just talking is not good enough. But when you speak honestly and truthfully, the universe expands. I honestly believe that. I'm telling you the truth when I say that. And on the other side, I feel like when you lie, the universe shrinks a little bit. And this next song is called I Promise. The batch of flofay that I'm about to send to you is called I Promise. And she promises to be true, as she says in this song. And I'm glad. I'm glad that I can end this episode on that kind of note, a universe-expanding note. Flofay promises to be true, and in doing so, she expands the universe. I recommend you do the same. Every night's a school night. Thanks for listening.
To always be true. was just a game. Then you said that you were leaving. I know I'm the one who's to blame. I know that I'll love you. I'll always be true. My prayers found an answer. Love me too.
Gave this land to me, this brave, this golden land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, you are by my side. With the help of God, I know I can be strong. The help of God, I know I can be strong to make this land our home. If I must fight a fight to make this land our own, until is mine.